We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. First order of business is the minutes from last meeting. Representative Kraft, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from March 6th?
Madam Chair, I haven't. Move their approval.
Great. All those, any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The minutes are adopted. And we have a pretty light agenda today. We're just, we have just one bill, and so we thought it might be a great chance to maybe go in a little deeper on that bill and get a little more information on ECO. We have a lot of new members on the committee, and it might be a great chance for them to learn a little bit more about ECO. And so with that, Representative Stevenson is going to move that House File 4574 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, it looks like there maybe is an amendment. Yep. So Representative Stephen moves the A3 to get the bill in the shape he would like. Great. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Okay, with all of that, Representative Stevenson, welcome and tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill, as you mentioned, is a refinement of the ECO bill that passed a couple of years ago. By way of background, this bill has to do with energy efficiency and conservation. Minnesota is a national leader in energy efficiency and conservation, which we should be really proud of, because energy efficiency conservation saves consumers money and it saves carbon emissions at the same time. It's win-win. It's the best way to prevent unnecessary carbon emissions, but also puts money in the pockets, keeps money in the pockets of our constituents. We've had conservation programs in Minnesota for a very long time in Minnesota. The old program was known as SIP, Conservation Improvement Program. We passed the ECO bill a couple years ago that modernized, expanded, and upgraded the ECO, or the SIP program, and renamed it the ECO program. And so as that new bill has been implemented, the conversations among the stakeholders have continued, and they have identified things that could use tweaks and refinements and slight changes, and so that's the bill that's before you today. It's important to understand about ECO that there's a tremendous coalition that supported the ECO bill when it passed and continues to work on it. That coalition includes utilities of all stripes across Minnesota, so IOUs, co-ops, and munis. It includes business groups, it includes labor groups, it includes environmental groups, just a really strong, broad, and deep coalition that's very well engaged. And throughout the interim, that coalition has been meeting and discussing the bill, the program, I should say, and made some suggestions for how it could work better. And that's the bill that's before you. It contains a number of changes, some of which are very technical, but a couple of which that I would highlight. First of all, one of the big things that changed when we passed ECO a couple years ago was the integration of efficient fuel switching into the ECO regime. Because it was new, there were some assumptions that were made about how that would work that haven't borne out, and so we need to modify efficient fuel switching as it's in ECO to better reflect the reality. Beyond that, there's also some changes, for example, to how the program considers large consumers such as data mining facilities. It's important to note that we already treated large industrial customers differently under ECO than other people, so this change of dealing with data mining really brings in conformity with how we deal with other large industrial customers for whom who use a lot of power and for whom there aren't really obvious energy efficiency things immediately that a utility can offer, programming that they can offer to those customers. So, Madam Chair, I know there are some really great testifiers signed up here, and maybe happy to hear from them, and then I'd be happy to answer questions.
That sounds great. First on the list is Michelle Grancy, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Commerce. Welcome back to committee. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Chair Acomb, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Grancy. I serve as the Deputy Commissioner of Energy at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm joined here today by John Kelly, the Government Affairs Director, as well as Anthony Fryer, who's our ECO Unit Director. Right after my testimony, I do have to depart, but Anthony has over 10 years of experience with SIP, now ECO, and can provide any sort of deeper dive that you might want. So today I am here in support of House File 4574. A huge thanks to Representative Stevenson for your work as chief author of the ECO Act and for bringing forward this important update. The department provides regulatory oversight of the ECO program and is extremely proud of the program's achievements to date. The program is routinely recognized by the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy as one of the most effective in the nation. The passage of the 2021 ECO Act has provided an important framework for which to expand these efforts. Notable changes include providing utilities the opportunity to optimize energy use and delivery through the inclusion of load management and efficient fuel switching programs, raising the energy savings goal for the state's electric investor-owned utilities, more than doubling the low-income spending requirements for all investor-owned utilities, providing greater planning flexibility for municipal and cooperative utilities, and including activities to improve energy efficiency for public schools. Since the passage of the ECO Act, department staff have been working with stakeholders to implement programs under the new framework, and the department is excited about the new programs being implemented by Minnesota utilities. Xcel, Gas and Electric, CenterPoint, and Otter Tail have all included efficient fuel switching programs in their 2024 to 2026 plans. Programs include incentives to switch to electric air source heat pumps, electric outdoor equipment, and electric vehicle charging. Great River Energy and Conexus have also included efficient fuel switching programs incentivizing air source heat pumps. Xcel and Otter Tail have included load management programs in their ECO portfolios to help manage peak demand. Xcel and Otter Tail expect to achieve 101 megawatts and 61 megawatts of demand reduction, respectively. While significant progress has been made since passage of the ECO Act, the department understands that adjustments are necessary and important as ECO continues to evolve. The department believes that House File 4574 provides such necessary adjustments by modifying the efficient fuel switching criteria, removing the efficient fuel switching spending cap, and allowing for an electric investor-owned utility efficient fuel switching financial incentive. These changes, along with others contained in the bill, will provide necessary impetus for increased utility efforts that dovetail with the new federal and state initiatives in order to maximize Minnesota's drive toward a clean energy future. So with that, the department supports House File 4574. Anthony and John will stay to answer any questions or provide further detail you might have for the department. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Grancy, and appreciate you being here today. And I'm sure we're being left in good hands. So next on our list of testifiers is Chris Dufferin from Center for Energy and the Environment. Welcome to committee, Mr. Dufferin. Please state your name and proceed with your comments.
Thank you, Chair Acomb. Thank you, members, for this opportunity to testify. My name is Chris Dufferin. I'm president of Center for Energy and Environment. I'd also like to thank Representative Stevenson for this bill and for the 2021 Eco Act, which this bill is making some modifications to. The Eco Act was, as you recall, passed back in a divided legislature. It was a bipartisan bill backed by a large coalition, and that coalition is back here today to support this bill. What we learned through the first set of eco plans is that eco largely works. It maintains nation-leading efficiency programs and cost-effective investments. It opens new opportunities for more demand response, and it encourages efficient fuel switching when new technology gives customers better options. The first round of plans, which went into effect only 2 months ago, reflects this progress. And to give one example, but I think a pretty important example, Xcel Energy filed a plan to save 2.25% of retail sales, which is well above the 1.75% requirement that's in the statute. Thanks to ECO, they can incorporate demand response programming into their efficiency programming, which will help their customers manage their load at the same time as they reduce their load. They were also able to add rebates for efficient, cost-effective technologies that they couldn't before, things like air source heat pumps, heat pump water heaters, outdoor equipment even. And they, and really all of our public utilities, are increasing efficiency program resources for low-income customers. All of this was enabled by the bill in 2021, the Eco Act. We also learned over the course of particularly this last year in talking to a lot of different stakeholders, in particular those that were on the front lines working on the plans, trying to implement the plans, that we could improve the eco regulatory process, and therefore we could improve future eco plans. So, for instance, we could streamline the efficient fuel switching tests so that utilities, particularly our smaller utilities, could easily meet the regulatory burden. And this simplification is further warranted because of your decision last year to put electric utilities on a path to 100% carbon-free energy. Simplified modeling can now tell us when electric measures reduce carbon emissions, because in large part, electric measures reduce carbon emissions now, in part thanks to that bill. We also wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to capture more federal resources and investments from the Inflation Reduction Act. By lifting the caps imposed on utilities in the next couple of years, we can ensure there are programs available to help customers insulate their homes, install efficient mechanical equipment, while maximizing those federal resources that are coming into Minnesota. To ensure that our electric utilities are partners in helping us bring federal resources home, this bill includes a new efficient fuel switching goal for our electric investor-owned utilities. Better motivating our electric utilities to add efficient load to periods of less demand, which is really what ECO ultimately facilitates, is critical to growing the market for home electrification, maintaining long-term affordability for customers, and maximizing federal rebates and tax credits to Minnesotans. And then finally, this bill provides more clarification and alignment between traditional efficiency goals and efficient fuel switching in a variety of ways. So it's a modest bill in some ways, but it's actually a very important evolution, I think, of Minnesota's nation-leading efficiency policies. So I thank you for considering it and for bringing this forward, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dufferin. We'd be able to stay around if we can go through the testifiers.
Absolutely.
We'll have questions. Great. Next on our list, we have Kent Solem, Director of Government Relations with Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. And I think I said Solem. It's probably Sulin. Sulem. See? Names.
Practice speaks perfect, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Sulem. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm chair member of the committee. I'm Ken Sulem, Director of Government Relations and Senior Counsel for the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. I'll be rather brief rather than trying to give you an overview history that you've received. I just want to focus on a couple of sections of the bill. that are very important to the munis. First is sections 3 and 5, which creates a definition of data mining and exempts such operations from the equal requirements of conservation reporting. What we're finding is we have members who are having these operations pop up almost overnight. They're very easily set up, they're very easily taken down. And they're mainly computer banks are running 24 hours a day. The data miners have contracts that require that they provide 95% power guaranteed to their clients. In order to get preferred rates, we ask that they try to 95% capacity rate. But what we're finding is that there's just simply not any room for extra efficiencies. They're so unique in the way that they operate, the efficiencies aren't there for the outset. And so we're asking for that exemption. The other section we're concerned about is section 6, which quite frankly corrects an oversight from the original 2001 bill, or 2021 bill, I'm sorry. What this does is restore for municipal gas utilities the same 1% savings goal that the IOUs have now, and that had always been the original goal of for munis. Just when we transferred language over, we transferred it for electric and not for gas. And this just corrects that oversight from 2021 and restores to 1% the savings expectation for a municipal gas operation. That I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. next on our list, we have Mike Bull, Senior Policy Advisor with Elite Minnesota Power. Welcome back to committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As you know, I'm Mike Bull, Senior Policy Advisor to the Elite family of energy businesses, including Minnesota Power, the public utility that provides reliable and affordable service to residents and businesses across northeastern Minnesota. We're proud that we have exceeded the state's energy efficiency target 14 years in a row, helping, as Representative Stevenson mentioned, helping our customers save money and save energy. And we appreciate the opportunity to provide brief comments in support of House File 4574 and thank Representative Stevenson for his leadership, long leadership. It was a much longer path than we expected when we first reached out to him on ECO and for bringing this ECO update bill forward. I also want to thank the ECO coalition members. Like in 2021, this bill was negotiated collaboratively with a broad group of stakeholders. For our part, Minnesota Power actively worked to develop and pass ECO and very much looked forward to providing our customers with new programs, offering more choices, more opportunities to save money and save energy. But we found, as we tried to implement to the new law, despite the great guidance that we were receiving from the Department of Commerce, Anthony Fryer and his team, there were a number of provisions in the bill as it was enacted that in practice caused us confusion, uncertainty, and seemed overly resource intensive relative to the value. So we reached out to other stakeholders to start talking about those, and we found that others had concerns as well. CEE pulled us all together to talk through those concerns. We thank them for that facilitation, and this bill is the result of that good work. We think the bill will help to further unlock the value and promise of the ECO legislation. I urge you to support it. I do want to provide maybe a little historical tidbit. When I was at CEE and we were pulling the folks together then, and I was doing some foundation drafting for the bill before we turned it over to Mr. Iloff to do the expert drafting, I was calling it the Energy Optimization Bill, which no one liked. And Chris Dufferin one day walked into my office and said, "Why don't we got a stuff conservation in there somewhere. It's a conservation bill." I'm like, "Oh." And then, so we did that, and it was ECO, and ECO was born because Chris walked down to my office and, and insisted that we change the name. So I just want to urge you to support the bill. Happy to answer any questions you might have. And thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. And last on our list of testifiers is Joe Demmel, who's Managing Director of Buildings with Fresh Energy. Welcome to committee. please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Acom and members of the committee. My name is Joe Dammel, and I'm the Managing Director of Buildings at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based here in Minnesota, and for the past 30 years, we've been advocating for policies to achieve an equitable carbon neutral economy, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 4574, and thank Representative Stevenson for bringing this forward and working on it and your work in 2021 to pass the original ECO. So as we've heard already today, this bill provides critical updates to the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act, or ECO, which passed in 2021 with bipartisan support and was endorsed by a wide range of stakeholders, including Fresh Energy. One of the most significant provisions of ECO is that it unlocks the ability of utilities to pursue efficient fuel switching, which means changing the underlying fuel used to heat buildings, water, and more in a way that produces net benefits to consumers. Utilities filed their first ECO plans in 2023, and we reviewed those during the regulatory process at the Department of Commerce. I do want to thank members of the or staff of the Department of Commerce for managing a big transition to the program and managing it really well. And I also want to acknowledge utilities, who did make strides in their first efficient fuel switching programs represented in ECO. But in reviewing the programs, it became clear to us that they could and should do more to maximize these important programs. So the provisions in the bill will remove barriers to the deployment of efficient fuel switching measures and programs and will allow utilities to maximize the benefit of complementary policies at both the state and federal levels. This will deliver increased benefits to customers and will help Minnesota achieve its climate goals. For these reasons, I support you, urge you to support House File 4574, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, you, Mr. Dammel. And then we did have one person sign up for public testimony, Dave Wager, with Executive Director with Minnesota Propane Association. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Dave Wager, Executive Director of the Minnesota Propane Association. In 2021, the Energy Conservation Act was passed with guardrails to meet its conservation goals. In 2023, carbon-free electricity by 2040 was passed. In 2024, it's become apparent that stakeholders will not be able to obtain the requirements of these bills. House File 4574 removes the guardrails that were established. Our concerns include, but are not limited to, the following. Lines 4.1 to 4.4, stricken from the bill, allowing increased emissions to count towards energy conservation. Line 8.28 strikes using a full fuel cycle energy analysis. This deletion will increase emissions as it does not account for the energy needed to produce electricity. Lines 15.26 to 15.33 allow for fuel switching based on improvements the utility expects to achieve. It doesn't consider the expected improvements of the fuel it replaces. Renewable propane, as an example, is available and being used in the United States today. Renewable propane blends with conventional propane at any percentage, meaning that we need no new infrastructure, no new equipment, or appliances. It can go into our existing systems and work. Recently, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation assessed the amount of generation that will be available compared to the projected demand of electricity and highlighted concerns about the risk of outages due to insufficient generation as utilities grapple with challenges to transition to new energy sources. Quote, "This report is a serious reminder that decisions we make today will impact our power reliability tomorrow," Derek Moe, CEO of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association, said. According to the report, a large portion of the continent, including Minnesota, is at risk in the winter months if the weather is severe. In a state like Minnesota, having reliable power during dangerously cold winter weather can mean life or death. End quote. The Grid Reliability Report from the Energy Information Administration states that the system average customer minutes of interruption increased 127% from 2021 to 2022. The customer average length of outage increased 96% from 2021 to 2022. We need to ensure that propane is an integral part of our energy mix. An example of propane. Propane is 73% hydrogen, according to its chemical formula, while natural gas is made up of 70% methane. Methane has 80 times the warming power of carbon monoxide, while propane is listed as a non-pollutant, which cannot harm air, soil, or water. According to the EPA, propane is almost three times more efficient than electricity. Instead of hiding emissions and making allowances to not meet the 2020-40 carbon-free goal, we need to evaluate and resolve the likely consequences before experiencing them. Inefficient fuel switching and emissions exemptions will not solve anything. Minnesotans, especially rural Minnesotans, need reliable energy access and access to all forms of energy at an affordable price. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wager. Is there anyone else that wants to speak to this bill? Not seeing anyone. Maybe with that, we can turn back to members of the committee for questions or discussion. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps the last testifier could come back. I have a couple questions. Well, he intrigued my interest. I think Representative Stevenson knows why where I'm going, or close to there. Anybody that's been on this committee for as long, for 5-6 years now. It's Mr. Wager, right? So
Wager.
Wager? Okay.
Wager.
Wager.
Like betting. Wager.
Now you're talking Mr. Garofalo's. And he did threaten to not to retire if you don't get that done, by the way.
Okay, we're getting a little far afield here, folks.
All right. Mr. Wager, I recall you, the propane industry, bringing this up in years past. Like in 2021, I think, is when we started talking about ECO. And I believe there was a lot of conversation with this then. Am I correct?
Mr. Yes. Wager.
Wager. Hey, I used to say Wagner, and I got past the end, so.
Believe me, nobody messes it up more than I do, so.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so you just mentioned, like, the removal of lines 4.1 to 4.4, and can you elaborate, like, where, what it is that concerns you so much about that?
Mr. Wager.
We had concerns when the legislation was going on, you know, and at that time we were told that this would have minimal impact on propane. You know, we were told that we were cleaner than electricity, as we still are today. But the way we read 4.1 to 4.4 is that this is going to allow fuel switching to count towards an energy savings goal, even if it increases gas emissions into the atmosphere.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, thank you for that. I think there's a lot that has been playing out in the last few weeks. I'm personally dependent on propane. But if we have all these incentives to, and I don't see, like, the incentives that are being put towards the gas, natural gas, that are being given to the propane side, which I don't have the ability to get natural gas. So, And we have seen in this committee the concern about some new power demand that we're going to be having, especially very close to me, greater than the large base load that we provide there now, with just one, and there's supposed to be three more. So in my facility, I can at least turn on my gas fireplaces whether I have electricity or not. They're not dependent upon electricity. I can manually ignite them, and they create heat, and they can keep pipes from freezing. If we're going to continue down this direction, I find this to be somewhat concerning, but perhaps Mr. Wager can answer, like, what's going to happen with the propane supply with this increase to fuel switching, and where do you see the concerns about switching from propane to electricity?
Mr. Wager.
Madam Chair, Representative Mecklen, you know, just like any other energy source, you know, we hear about base load. Propane is no different. Propane needs base load. If we don't have base load, we lose based on our transportation systems. Our members will reduce their assets for storage and transportation of propane. They'll reduce their staff, so we'll lose jobs. You know, propane is a critical go-to energy, especially in emergency situations. I'll give you an example. I know this dates a little bit, but it goes back to the Eco Bill era. Winter Storm Uri in 2021 that hit Texas. That got all the way up into parts of Minnesota. And there were shortages in our state. And during Winter Storm Uri, enough propane was delivered to back up the natural gas and electric industry in our state to heat 6,000 homes in Minnesota for 1 year. Now, if our industry loses transportation, assets, labor, and we're the go-to energy in emergency situations, what's going to happen when the propane industry, instead of saying, yes, we'll come help you, says no because they can't help you anymore? It's shouldn't too much reliance on one form of energy. Thank you.
Representative Mecklen, did you have any follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, maybe.
And I think that kind of goes to the point that I understand everybody's moving in a certain direction, but as we see, like, as it was mentioned here before, this one data center consumes so much. There's always going to be one in Rosemont, and plus at least three more just in my city. And if we don't have an all-the-above approach to make sure these homes are heated in the winter, we are going to be setting ourselves up for a catastrophe. Like, I don't know how you're going to handle all this. And particularly when you look at many of these outstate properties, they don't even have the electrical infrastructure to handle that kind of load coming to their properties. I mean, they don't have like two or three phase run to their you know, some of these long driveways. And the propane, I mean, it's portable if it needs to be. And it can be brought in on a temporary way. During the foreclosure crisis, many of these homes, they brought in temporary tanks with temporary hoses to get them so we could get them heated and get them repaired and back up to sellable, marketable structures. Mr. Wager, do you have an answer to, like, not only the importance of using full fuel cycle analysis, but also the advantages to having propane in a home or a business?
Mr. Wager.
Madam Chair, Representative Mecklen, well, the full fuel cycle analysis is important because that measures the full stream of the energy production from extraction so that we know what one unit of energy is when it gets delivered and used at the point of use. So that's, to me, how all fuels should be compared. But the follow-up, again, as Representative Mecklen mentioned, is the portability of propane. You know, we can take it anywhere and make it do a job. It's propane energy stored on site. You know, in 2022, or was 2023, the winter prior to this one, we had a lot of snow. Northern Minnesota, severe winter weather went through the Moose Lake area all the way up to Duluth. There were power outages up there for 3 to 4 days, but it really didn't make the news other to the people that lived up there, because those people are used to being independent and taking care of those cells. And the majority of those people are on propane, and they have several weeks' worth of energy in that tank that they can use for power generation, heat, water heating, things like that, with just a very small, affordable generator. They don't have to worry about the grid going down. I mean, yes, they worry about it, but these people are prepared, and they know how to handle it, and propane is a vital tool to handling a situation like that.
Representative Mecklen.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a quick question I didn't catch at the beginning. Where is this bill going next? Representative Stevenson.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mecklen, the bill's being laid over. It doesn't have any of the committee stops, but now that I've been recognized, I will like to address some of the things that have been said going on so far. I think that there's an opportunity here to maybe look at the bill a little bit more carefully than's been done so far. When we're talking about deleting language referencing the greenhouse gas tests, the language is not deleted from statute, it's reorganized. So, for example, if you look at Section 9 of the bill, which you can find on page 11, you can see that fuel switching improvements are deemed efficient only if, and this is paragraph 2, 11.13, if it would result in a net reduction of state why greenhouse gas emissions is defined, and so on from there. So when Mr. Wager's talking about deleting that reference back on page 4, it's not, I don't think it has the significance that was suggested. That requirement is still in the act.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm concerned because we see this quite a bit. There are many of us that are completely dependent on propane. Electrification of 100% in many of those properties simply is not affordable or feasible for many. And like Mr. Wager said, I mean, at the very least, we would have to have backup generation on site. The only thing we could power it with reasonably would be propane, because the likelihood of delivering 200-300 gallons of diesel fuel or home heating oil would be, well, plus it would be very expensive. But the other side I have of this, Representative Stevenson, is if a utility gets a lot of people to switch to away from natural gas to over to, or anything, to electric, they get credits for that year, but because they have to reduce their usage annually, they've now picked up new baseload, the power or new demand that now the next year makes it harder for them to meet those reductions. And I've talked to a couple of the co-ops that have expressed their concern about this, that by incentivizing more switching, it's creating more demand on their that they have their new electrical customer usage, that they now have to somehow reduce that by that 1.5% or whatever it is, 1.75%. How do you address that going forward?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Meckland, I think one of the things that is valuable about ECO is that it is an ongoing process where we're constantly looking for opportunities to achieve conservation and efficiency. And in a climate that's as variable as Minnesota, where our residents and businesses have high energy usage because we have cold winters and hot summers, that's a good thing that we're constantly looking for ways to help consumers save money and save energy. And so it is accurate that every year they have a goal that they have to meet, and it's accurate, as you heard, that our utilities are consistently able to meet and exceed those goals, often by a significant margin. So you heard testimony today both as to Minnesota Power and to Xcel that they are far in excess of their goals, and I know many co-ops are doing well in that respect as well. I also wanted to speak to your concern about propane to note, and this should be self-evident, but the bill doesn't require anyone to switch from propane. If you want to stay on propane, this bill does not change that. This bill allows utilities to work with consumers to save money on energy, and if they're going to save money from switching to from propane to electricity, and that's what they choose to do, Minnesotans should have that option. Should be their choice to do that if that's what they want to do, and the bill allows them to do that if it's going to save them money and save energy.
Representative Meckland.
No.
Oh, all done. And next is Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I have a question for Mr. Bull.
I think he's still around.
Is he still around?
Mr. Bull is always around.
I guess it could also be for Excel, but while you're coming down, my question was around, I was happy to see, I think you said that Elite had hit their SIP and now ECO goals exceeded them for 14 years or so. And so I'm just curious to understand, like, how does it work when you hit or exceed them? Like, I guess you don't stop, you keep going to get, like, how does that process work for what you're trying to do on an annual basis?
Yeah.
Mr. Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kraft, for that terrific question. Representative Stevenson mentioned that ECO and the ECO programming is an iterative process. We file three-year plans with the Department of Commerce with our proposals of what programs we're going to bring forward, what our energy efficiency achievements may be, and we go through a regulatory process. They look deep into those. So, and currently after ECO, the energy savings goal is 1.75% of our energy sales. This triennial we filed are setting our goal at 2.8%. So it's, there's a floor in the statute, but the actual achievements, the amounts that we're looking to save is based on the opportunity on the ground in our service territory.
Representative Kraft.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bull, so you're not limited where you can, what you can achieve.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Any other representatives, Susan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This could be either to nonpartisan staff or the author of the bill. Under the change in the bill, would fuel switching be allowed, or would incentives be able to be offered if the fuel switching is not just propane, but from a gas vehicle to an electric vehicle?
Representative Stevenson?
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, I don't think that the bill that's before you today changes ECO's application to vehicles. And I'm looking at Mr. Eliff, and he nodded at that. And I would further add, and I'm hoping he'll nod again when I say this, that I'm remembering that ECO, we specifically kind of carved out the vehicles. This isn't I don't think that utilities can do EV stuff, like rebates for EVs under ECO. But I didn't get a nod, so Mr. Eliff must have a more
Mr.
complicated
Eliff?
Answer to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson and Swazinski. I believe you're right, Representative Stevenson, that the ECO bill does not consider conservation with respect to vehicles.
Representative Swazinski.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Stevenson.
So Representative Swazinski, I don't think that you could do that now, and I don't think the bill current, I know that the bill that's before you doesn't change that.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Eliff. And Representative Stevenson, just a follow up to that, is there when it comes to the fuel switching and now with the incentives that will be allowed under this area, is there kind of a, you know, because you were pretty specific, Representative Stevenson, in talking about if folks were able to save money, they would be allowed to, the utilities would be allowed to do this. Is there a quantifier in there to say, If the incentives would they save money? Would then they be allowed to do it? Because if you're essentially giving someone cash, that's the incentive, right, to bribe them off of propane by using kind of that monopoly system, where like, hey, we get to raise your rates, electric payers, we're going to take that cash, give it to someone to incentivize them, and so that cash incentives, is there going to be a mathematical formula that calculates whether or not that person would save money with or without that incentive to allow them to be fuel switching? Or is it simply voluntary? Or are we just kind of saying that they will save money?
Representative Stevenson, and while you're thinking about your response, I think we got a little note that maybe the Department of Commerce might want to help further clarify the last comments made. So if Fryer? Want to come on, or Mr. Kelly, whichever, or both. But I'll let you go ahead and respond to the last question, Mr. Stevenson, or Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, so I'm not sure I'm totally tracking the question, but I'll do the best I can. I think that if you kind of look to the language I pointed to you to before on page 11, which is largely, as a lot of existing statutory and unchanged language, you'll see that to qualify under fuel switching, you have to result in a net reduction in the amount of energy consumed for a particular use. So you have to be using less energy. You have to result in a net reduction in statewide greenhouse gases. So there has to be less gas expended, and it has to be cost effective. So it has to be, you know, money savings or money efficient. Those are the requirements that are in current law for what constitutes fuel switching, and we're not changing that.
Do you want to follow up on this?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just, you know, and so that my question was, so to get to that third piece, is it all three pieces, or is it you can choose one, two, or three?
Representative Stevenson.
If you take a look at the bottom of, on a line 11.22, there's an and, not an or. You need all three.
Okay.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to make it cost effective for the customer, my question is, so let's say you have someone that, well, the calculation to get to that third and, let's say they're, well, they'd still actually save $5 a month by just staying on propane. And the utility, which is a monopoly, says, well, we're going to incentivize you $20 a month or $30 a month to now make sure that you're saving money to get you to that third level. Will you be able to buy cost savings because of the incentive to make sure that they're going to save money? Or does it have to be organic on its own? Does that make sense?
Representative Stevenson.
I don't think that, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I don't believe that's how the incentives under ECO usually work, but since we have someone from the department here, maybe they can elaborate on that question and correct me for what I said wrong earlier, I think, on the cars or whatever.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Fryer. Please state your name for the record, and then looks like we got a couple questions for you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Anthony Fryer with the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
And then I think the question that Representative Swazinski put forward about incentivizing to achieve the cost-effective factor.
Thank you, Chair. What the department will do when a utility proposes the efficient fuel switching program is to compare that proposed program to the criteria. Does it reduce source energy? Does it reduce greenhouse gas emissions? And then is it cost effective? Then we look at the cost effectiveness from the utility point of view, the participant, society, and work through each of those. And if those are met, then the program is approvable. The incentive from the utility is usually in the form of a lump sum rebate to the customer that allows that switch to become or help that switch to become cost effective in addition to the energy savings that are projected from that switch and other benefits as well.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then to the testifier, is there a limitation within the department on how much of an incentive that would be, let's say, to do a total switch for a homeowner, let's say it's a $10,000 switch to go from a propane system to an all-electric system? So that would be a upgrade to the panel. That would be, you know, pulling out the old furnace, getting rid of the old tank, doing all these things. Is there a percentage of that $10,000 that the utility would be limited to and then the customer would be limited to? Or is it, well, if the utility comes up with a program that meets all those three criteria, as long as the utility and ratepayers pay for the entire switch, would that be allowed by the department's rules and dictate as it moves forward?
Mr. Fryer.
Obviously, depends on the details, but the higher the incentive goes, the more the utility is in danger of proposing something that is not cost effective for the utility or its ratepayers. And so at that point, it would likely fall down in our analysis.
Representative Susan, before, one second, Mr. Eloff, it looks like you are wanting to pipe in about something, please.
I think so, Madam Chair. I think one thing maybe we haven't really said is the incentives here are for the utilities, not for individual customers. I'm glad Mr. Fryer is there. He can tell me if that's correct. And I'm looking at the Section 1 of the bill, which talks about the incentive plan, and it's in 216B.16, which, if you read it, talks about incentives for utilities to get them to do these activities. They're not incentives that are paid to retail customers, as I understand it, and I'd be interested in Mr. Fryer's response.
Mr. Fryer.
There are two things in the bill. The first that you're referring to, Mr. Eloff, is the financial incentive for the utilities. So the electric IOUs and the natural gas IOUs, if they achieve a certain savings beyond the required, they're eligible at the PUC for a financial incentive. What the representative, I think, was referring to was when the utilities implement their programs, there is often an incentive for the customer themselves to often help with the cost of any incremental expenses that there are when compared to other equipment.
Maybe this is more for my benefit than anybody else's.
No, this is helpful.
And are those incentives to individual customers what extent are they mentioned in ECO itself? As opposed to this is just something we allow utilities to do.
Mr. Fryer.
That's correct. It's not explicitly stated in statute, but it's part of the approach that historically utilities have taken.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's interesting. To the testifier, could it be construed that then the state money that is levied on behalf of taxpayers then is given to utilities, so not ratepayer money, it would be almost a pass-through. So we're taking state dollars, state tax dollars, are being leveraged then through the ECO Act to the utility, then to essentially launder, to incentivize folks from using propane or gas to heat their homes.
Mr. Fryer.
In terms of the financial incentive that the utility can be eligible for based on their achievements, that's calculated as a percentage of the net benefits that are achieved by the utility. That money, I believe, through the PUC, is paid for by the ratepayer.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, because of this expansion, is there so it's essentially two-pronged. So it's ratepayers are paying a tax to the state, and then the ratepayers are also paying kind of both ends of that. So my question to be, how much, because we're saying that this has fallen short, we need to expand this program, how much has been spent through the department so far up to this date and point to incentivize this action to utilities? And then have we tracked how much have utilities then used to incentivize on an individual basis? Have we tracked any of that? Because we're expanding this bill because it's not working. How much have we spent so far, and how much have we?
Can I?
Yeah, Representative Stevenson.
Okay, there's a lot there that, I'm sorry. The bill, the ECO is working. You just heard testimony from several testifiers that they're meeting and exceeding their goals. So it's not a problem with it not working. There are some revisions that can make it work even better, but reject the premise that the bill isn't working. Secondly, there's no tax dollars going on here. That I'm not sure where that quite came from, but that's not how ECO works. It's all contained inside the utility. There's rate recovery allowed, so there are utility customers are involved, but the state, it's not tax dollars flowing through the department to utilities, which I think was what you were suggesting. That's not how ECO works. So when we did ECO back in 2021, for example, there was no big cost to the general fund, no fiscal note to that effect. There was, I think, some cost to the regulator to manage the program, but that's not how it works. We're allowing rate recovery for IOUs in connection with this program, but there's no tax dollars in play.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question to the department is, so where does the Department of Commerce, who incentivizes the utilities to do this, the fuel switching, so if they meet certain criteria of fuel switching or energy efficiency, whether it's through fuel switching or using electricity, where does the department get that money to incentivize utilities to do fuel switching, to do energy efficiency, to do anything? Where does that money come from through the department? If they're incentivizing the utilities to do it, if they meet certain goals. I think that was the quote.
Mr. Fryer.
The department doesn't incentivize anything. We regulate the ECO program. The money that supports that regulation is assessed from the utilities, as far as I'm aware, not the taxpayer. The incentive that is available to the investor-owned utilities should they perform above a certain level is a methodology developed within the Public Utilities Commission, and once the department has closed out a particular program year, has approved the results of the investor-owned utilities performance in that year, that then goes to the PUC for analysis, for a stakeholder process, and ECO in its current form and in its previous iterations has provided the PUC with the authority, should it choose to do so, to provide a methodology for a financial incentive that the utility can be eligible for.
Thank you.
Can I add one more thing?
Representative Stevenson.
I just also want to note that you can't look at this in a vacuum, right? So if the utility doesn't engage in a conservation program, they need to be able to meet that demand. They will have to generate electricity sufficient to meet the demand, right? So you have to compare the cost of the incentive against the cost of meeting that demand. And the cost of the incentive will be less than the cost of meeting of building out capacity to meet demand. So you can't look at it by itself. You have to look at it holistically, which is how ECO is structured when we're talking about looking at, are you reducing the amount of energy? Are you decreasing the amount of emissions? And are you being cost effective? So you got to look at it in totality.
And looking around, I'm not seeing any other comments or questions. Before I turn it over to the author, I just want to say I appreciate the work on this bill. And the discussion today, I think, was really helpful. And I will just say I support and appreciate that carve out for data centers, or data mining, but I think this is an issue that we need to be thinking about more. I think that as we look at reliability and affordability, given their requirement for continued power, that's going to be a place where we need to focus some energy, no pun intended. But with that, I'll turn it over to the author for any final comment or any final comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with you wholeheartedly in your last comment there. I think that that's a subject worth thinking much more seriously about. ECO has been a successful program. Minnesota's an energy conservation leader. This bill will help us take us further in that direction, and I hope that the committee will consider including it in an omnibus.
Great. With that, Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 4574 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. That is all of the business that we have for today. We will meet again tomorrow. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
We are adjourned. Yeah.